Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by rockauto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Hello and welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 74. I am John Davis, and joining me today for this podcast, which, by the way, is the first MotorWeek podcast as MotorWeek, the television show, enters its 32nd season.
How many?
32.
Wow.
32 seasons of testing cars and taking your abuse. No, not just kidding. Around the table today, you probably already heard him, producer, writer, and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello, everyone.
Our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chepnick.
Hey.
Our associate producer and head honcho when it comes to road tests, Ben Davis.
Hey.
No relation.
No relation.
And writer, producer, Patrick Lucas.
Howdy.
Okay, we've got a lightning round and the MotorWeek mailbag, and that'll all come up in just a few moments. But first, let's begin with a car that has gotten very good reviews by the motoring press so far, and it looks like it could be an actual challenger, a domestic challenger to some of the best sports sedans in the world, and that is the compact Cadillac ATS, which they bill as a compact luxury sports coupe. Ben, why don't we start with you? Does the ATS live up to its billing, and what do you think of its chances are to convince somebody to not buy a BMW, an Audi, or an Infiniti?
That's just it. It does live up to the billing, but these 3 Series Fighter Wars, they have just allegiance of followers as our pony car wars do.
Yep.
And can you imagine a European pony car coming in, stepping into the ranks, and battling with Mustang and Camaro? That's pretty much what's going on here. Anyway, so it'll be hard to turn people, diehard 3 Series fans or A4 fans, C-Class fans, away from their ride. But, you know,
how was the car to drive?
It was super smooth on the highway. And the magnetic ride, I had a chance to drive it on a track, too. I tell you, it's super flat through the corners. It's pouring on the power. Magnetic ride tightens it right up. And you can really push it on the exit, too. And it stays right in shape. It's super well done as far as suspension goes. And
the four-cylinder turbocharged engine's got more power than most of its rivals, more horsepower.
30 anyway. More than the 328.
Yeah, it's 272 horsepower. I was driving the rear-wheel drive model through a Tremec 6-speed, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've only driven the 6, which I thought was a superbly handling car, but I was looking forward to driving the car with the lighter powertrain up front. And you know, it's got all the right bits. It's basically a lightweight rear drive chassis. It's got what they call a double pivot front suspension. They've done a almost 50-50 weight balance front to rear. It's got Brembo brakes on all but, I guess, the standard car. I mean, they've got a lot of hardware in this car, but more importantly, it seems to be dialed in right. Would you agree?
I would agree. And the design is very nice as well. It's not as sharp and angular as the art and science designs have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's smoother inside, too. They smoothed out some of the edges, and it's a lot more. It was time for a change, and they did it right.
I can agree with all that. It's a nice-looking car. Definitely more art and less science to the design. Just the fact that they're building it is beyond me. It impresses me, especially when you consider their last compact was the Cimarron.
Oh, yeah.
So they've definitely come a long way from there.
And they're talking about a coupe version.
What about a...
I've heard rumors of a V model,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
V models, definitely. I think that's a definite.
ATS-V versus M3, yeah. I can't wait for that.
LS7 would be nice in there.
If you ask their PR team, they've taken this thing. I mean, you see commercials, ATS versus the world, all mm-hmm. over. You know, I mean, they're really trying to push the limit, you know, and really steer people away from the Audis and the
which is going to be really almost impossible to do. But if they can get people that are coming into that market to think about it and even consider them, they'll have done what this car is supposed to do.
Well, they've changed their whole lineup in just a matter of a couple of weeks with the XTS coming out and then this coming out.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a new CTS coming down the pike
after
a year
nothing
or two.
For years. This it's a whole new Cadillac again, once again.
Patrick, you have read a lot of the press. We haven't actually had the ATS here at work yet, although the one's coming in soon. What do you think? I mean, you've grown up with a lot of friends who basically drool over 3 Series and Audi A4s. Do you think they'll even look at it a second time?
You're an A4 guy yourself, aren't you?
I am. He's an A4, that's right.
They don't have to know that.
No, that's all right. You know, the fact that some of us can actually afford an A4, that's perfectly
I think it's a very good-looking car. I mean, I think everyone kind of has their own allegiance. I don't know if they're going to...
Are you tied to Audi? In other words,
I'm very partial to them, but I mean, I thought the ATS was a very good-looking car. I think...
What would it take to make you switch?
Well, I think it already has the appeal that it's now the American car competing with all the Europeans. So, I mean, it's got its own appeal on that level.
It's like Rocky fighting the Russian all over.
But does that appeal to a lot of Americans that it is an American car?
I think it does more now than it used to.
It does to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that anybody, you know, would not want to see an American car do well against imports just because of, I mean, most people are patriotic. I don't think anybody, they're not going to get a cakewalk. The darn car is going to have to live up to its reputation.
The competition's fierce, too.
Yeah, it's getting more fierce.
And most of these things are probably going to go for like 40 grand, close to 40 grand.
Probably. It's a lot of cash.
A lot of money.
That might be the only stumbling block.
I expect they'll probably end up leasing most of them, which is what their rivals do.
Dealer presence got to be a lot higher than a lot of BMW Audis, though. So they might be easier to get in a lot of places where you can't easily get a BMW or an Audi.
That's true. More availability. Let's move on to a car that is half of an equation, of a two-car equation that just about everybody that is into performance cars has been talking about long before they even had a chance to drive them, and that is the Subaru BRZ. We already had the FRS from Scion in. Everybody probably knows these two cars were jointly developed between Toyota and Subaru. Toyota now actually owns Subaru. Front engine, rear drive, pancake four-cylinder, reasonable prices starting in the mid-20s. The BRZ, though, was an automatic. To the folks around the table that have driven both cars, and even if you haven't, that know about both cars, what do you think? Would you buy this car with an automatic? I mean, after all, let's face it, most of them will be sold that way.
Originally,
I was going to say, I have driven both, and I drove the BRZ first and then the FRS. And when I drove the BRZ as an automatic, it made you want to shift. The car kind of drove and, it was like, oh, man, I wish I could shift. I wanted to really shift it and get it into gear.
So you didn't find the steering wheel paddles enough?
Not as far as that. And then when I got in the FRS, it almost felt like I was forced to shift. And that's, once you got into third, it was fine. At least
So what do you think that is? Lack of power? I mean, this was 148 horsepower? Yeah,
200
horsepower. 200 horsepower.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot on paper.
Right. I mean, it was fine. It was nice to drive both of them. Obviously, they're the same car. But at least to me, I preferred the BRZ to the FRS, just as far as the automatic versus.
So you actually like the automatic more than the manual.
Yeah, and it wasn't that it was.
Do you work for again?
No, and it was fine. I mean, I had no problem with
it didn't
FRS.
Bother you.
It didn't bother me, but it almost felt like I was forced to shift rather than just it went on its own.
I actually got into the. I mean, most people drove the manual first. I actually got into the automatic first, and so going from the automatic to the manual, I like the automatic. I actually agree with you. To a large extent, but the manual was far more fun. Now, I can appreciate if you drove the manual first and went to the automatic, you might not be crazy about it, but I don't know, other guys?
Yeah, I mean, these cars are more similar than different, but I didn't mind the automatic so much when you tool it around, but at the track, it does not let you launch at all compared to the manual. So, if you're going to be taking the track.
Bogged down?
Yeah, it just wouldn't let you rev it at all, but it's not bad. The BRZ... Obviously, the styling is a little bit different, but not much. And the interior, you can get a few more things in the interior. I think nav is standard in the BRZ. So it's a little nice.
It's not my favorite nav system, though.
Oh, yeah. Automatic's an $1,100 option, I think. So,
Benny?
Yeah, the power was falling short for me. I drove the automatic first and thought it was a little soul-robbing. But then I got into the stick, and it didn't feel a whole lot more fun to drive to me, really. Seems to fall flat in the mid-range on the RPMs for me. It it stops climbing very, it doesn't climb very fast to redline. There's just not enough torque under pedal for me to have a lot of fun driving it on the street anyway. I know Brian drove it on the track and said it's quite the opposite, but I didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep it up, like you say, you got to keep it up in high RPMs and put your foot into it, but it's got great balance. That's the best thing about the car, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it could certainly use more power, yeah.
And but, it could sound a little better too, maybe.
It just has great balance.
It's a
throwback to the old, you know, sports cars, less is more kind of thing. And I think for the most part, it's achieved it.
Now, Patrick, you drove it extensively.
Yeah, I got to spend all weekend
also,
with it.
And you took it on a road trip. So
I
you did.
Did
it like you used it like a lot of people are going to use any car.
Yep.
Comments. Was it comfortable?
Comfortable, I don't know about that. It was definitely comfortable for, you know, a quick drive. If you're driving more than a couple hours, you might want to pick a different car if you can.
What got you after a couple hours on the road?
It's just you can feel every little bump on the road. The seats are plenty comfortable, but, I mean, you're just so low to the ground, you feel everything you
hit. On the other hand, it is a sports car,
that
right?
is true. So, I mean, I guess you're supposed to expect that. But if you love attention, you'll definitely like this car because I got a lot of looks.
But if it was a convertible, would you just say it would be better than a Mazda Miata would be?
I'm not a fan of convertibles. So.
Yeah, good point. Oh, my goodness. Got to get this boy out of the sun more.
It's not quite a Miata, but, you know, I think it's pretty close. It's still
waiting for an STI version or a...
Yeah, there's definitely got to be Toyota some more power there.
As an old Miata owner, the Miata is so cozy because it's so small, you really feel like you wear it. I did not have that same feeling in this car. I mean, not that it's huge, and I'm a big guy, and I had to kind of duck down to get into it. But once I was in it, I felt like I was in a performance car, but I didn't necessarily feel like I was in something I was wearing like you do with a Miata. Miata's a pretty special case.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if Miata ever came out with a true coupe, I think it would give this car a run for its money.
That would be an interesting comparo for sure.
Okay, let's move along to something that is certainly a dream car for an awful lot of people. And that is we've tested our variety of Bentley Continentals over the last couple of years. They're now trying to go a little bit more responsibly. Bentley Continental GT with a twin turbo V8 versus the 12. Good move, bad move? Does it really make any difference? What'd you think about the car? Benny, we'll start with you.
It still has an incredible amount of horsepower, so I don't really think it makes a whole lot of difference. I mean, you're only going to use a certain amount of power, and definitely the having fun quotient was still there. The subtle changes to the body, it seems like this body style has been going on for maybe too long, but...
They've made some minor changes, but it basically looks the same.
It's just initially, a grill, different badge, different exhaust tips with an 8, which is kind of slick.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, as I spent time with it, I was appreciating the shape. It just takes a while to appreciate it now because you've seen it so much. But
yeah,
a good car, and
I think they made it a lot better car, really, because the 12 was kind of overkill. I mean, the V8 is perfect. It's 500 horsepower.
I think it sounds
That's plenty.
Better.
It sounds like a NASCAR.
Yeah.
It sounds insane, especially under full throttle. And it lightened up the front end. It's still not a great handler, a lot of roll, but I think it made it a better car in just about every way.
Yeah, to talk about the sound. I was in Spain with the car, and we were in up probably 10 flights up in a booth watching the cars go around at first. And the first thing we notice is the sound. Before, I mean, with soundproof glass. We could hear the cars going around the track, and then we actually got to drive on the track. And they definitely, I mean,
it's kind of what Bentley's known for. Is
you
that
can't
sound.
Tell the difference. For between the 12 and the 8.
Yeah, and most people tooling around these things, they're not going to know whether they're a 12, 8, or half the time it's running on four cylinders, and you know, it's got the cylinder deactivation. Mm-hmm. So yeah. No, you're never going
to
know.
The wonderful thing about this job is we get to drive some of these cars that, first of all, we get to drive some of them that we could never own. And second of all, we get to drive them in ways that probably people that own them would never think about doing it. unless you do that, you can't appreciate the engineering that went into it.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty impressive car. Okay, let's move on to an impressive brand, Hyundai. Everybody knows they keep racking up higher and higher sales. They're expanding. They're moving up market. But the one area they've not been able to crack as far as family cars so far has been the full-size sedan, the Taurus level Avalon. They've tried several times, and the cars have gone over like lead balloons. Now they're doing it again. The car is called the Hyundai Azera. Is this going to be a breakthrough into this market for Hyundai, or is it one sedan too many for them? Any comments?
The Hyundai stuff to me, I mean, they have been very impressive lately. They're kind of hit or miss. Some I really love, some I don't. This one I'm not so big a fan of. You know, I like the Genesis a lot more, and they're kind of both playing in the same field. To me, the Azera, it looks almost like a Sonata. They did do some changes to the interior, so it doesn't look at all like a Sonata, but still not enough. I mean, a lot of the switchgear, the nav's the same.
It's awful close looking.
Yeah, so I can't say it's a big success as far as I'm concerned.
Well, to me, ours was red, and it seemed to be the same shade of red that you seem to see every Buick in. So it looked
that's probably the market, isn't it?
It looked a lot like a Buick to me inside and out, and for that reason, I think it'll be a hit because I'm sure the warranty is pretty unbelievable.
That's an interesting comment because in a lot of ways, this car does go after the old Buick buyer that gave up LeSabres and Park Avenues, and where Buick's working very hard to move themselves into a younger buying market.
Mm, yeah.
I think we all would agree it's a very competent car. It just maybe it's too big for us.
That's what I was. I mean, but the Genesis is that car, at least when that first came out, I didn't think anything could really.
But the Genesis is a smaller car on the
inside. It is a smaller car, right. Yeah. It is a smaller car. This was almost.
And it's a rear drive car. This is a front drive car.
This was almost too big. That's how I felt getting in, looking at it. It almost did feel just a little too big.
And your comment is exactly indicative of what has happened in this country to family cars. We've moved in my lifetime from where a full-size car was your standard family car to where it's a mid-size car now. And when we get into a full-size car, we almost feel like it's too big.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, but you might be, I may be in the complete wrong market for it.
You got two kids.
I do, but I don't know. But I mean, I drive a minivan, so, so I don't know, you know, but I think as far as a sedan, that might not be the car that I would much rather have a Genesis.
But a lot of people don't like minivans and they're looking for larger sedans to move into. I mean, do you ever see yourself doing that as your kids get older?
No, I could see as far as in the Hyundai brand, I'd rather get a Genesis for a full size or whatever, you know, whatever they're calling the Genesis now, if they even call it a full size.
But that also says that you'd like to drive a car that has a little bit more sporting attitude. I didn't find the Azera had sporting attitude.
No,
I don't think it has. It doesn't pretend to.
It's load up five buddies and five bags of golf clubs.
My cousin, who's 6'4", myself, who's 6'1", and our girlfriends, plenty good on a road trip, but it was a little underpowered. And in any everyday scenario, I think it might be a little bit too big.
Yeah, it doesn't have the Euro sleek that the Genesis does, but it's a people mover, and it has comfort, and it's smooth ride.
And they'll probably sell enough of them.
At least in China.
Yeah, at least in China. All right, our lightning round, where our panelists have 2 minutes to share their opinions on topics that are creating a buzz. And when the time is up, this is what they'll hear. Yeah, very appropriate sound. Thank you, Michelle. Okay. This kind of follows on to some of the questions we've been talking about and attitudes about people and cars. First came minivans, then SUVs, then crossovers. What do you think is the next big thing in automobiles or trucks? Something that captures the imagination of a new generation, or at least their garages. What do you think is going to be the next big trend? And whoever answers this correctly will probably become president of a car company. Any thoughts?
I just recently drove the Crosstrek, which is basically a Subaru Impreza with 7 inches of lift. I think maybe the lifted car. Remember the old AMC Spirits, a two-door hatchback with a lift? I'd like to see that something like that come back. Maybe a lifted WRX, just lifted all-wheel drive stuff with good gas mileage, decent horsepower.
Lifted because it just makes more sense in bad weather, because it looks cool,
It just makes more sense with today's roads. I mean, try to take the S4 downtown Baltimore. I'm going to try that tonight and see how that goes.
But so you have good luck. Fillings left in your teeth.
Potholes and damage and roads are rough these days. 140 is a killer.
Yeah, it's going to be something that at least none of us have even seen it. I mean, there's got to be something to come along. I'm sure it'll be alternatively powered or electric or some type of alternative
hybrid of some.
Yeah, and it's going to look cool, and it's going to have like a wow factor, like an iPod, like someone that's you got to get the GM blah blah, just because it's so awesome, because it's so everything works well, and it's well designed, and it gets 100 miles a gallon. And it's going to be something like that. What it is, I don't know, but it's got to have a real wow factor to it.
I mean, I would say the autonomous, the drive your own car. I mean, that, you know, Volvo,
or don't drive your own car.
Or don't drive your own car. I mean, the car drives itself. Volvo has it, and Google put out their car.
GM and that made a big announcement recently about how they're putting all these systems into that.
I mean, will it ever see the light of day, maybe in our lifetime? I don't know.
I don't think lawyers are allowed to happen. I mean, the technology is definitely there, but
can't you just imagine the first time there's an accident, the lawsuits? So I don't know, unless we change our society. Patrick, any thoughts?
I'm racking my brain here trying to think of something that they haven't tried already or they're trying right now. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, it seems like the FRS is aimed at a younger generation. I don't know, I mean, how well it caught on. I think more middle-aged people are buying it.
I know a lot of people thought the Honda Ridgeline was going to, start a new trend, but it really didn't. And we may even see that from Dodge. I know they're trying to tell me something that we're out of time. So thanks, everybody. Let's move on now to our Motorweek mailbag. And remember, if you submit your question and we choose to answer it here on a podcast, you win a fabulous Motorweek T-shirt. And here we go. This one's for Fred, or from Fred. The cars on Motorweek always look like they've just been washed and waxed. What products or tips do you have do-it-yourself detailers like himself? Well, they've basically been washed and waxed because one member of the staff took it down and hosed it off before we put it for a camera.
Yeah, I read this question, and I was racking my brain trying to tell you something interesting. But the only thing that we do differently, as far as car soap, we just get the cheapest off the shelf we can get. I mean, I'm sure we'd love to have a car care sponsor, but for now we just walk down to Walmart and buy stuff. The biggest thing that we do is dry the car off when we're done is the only thing I can think of.
I think that's key, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that probably most people don't do. Let's get a nice chamois and dry it off. And we pay a lot of attention to wheel cleanliness and tire cleanliness. That can go a long way in how your overall car looks when you're done washing it.
We used to joke that you didn't have to take the dust off of a car that was being shot on television because TV didn't have that greater resolution, and it cut down on some of the glare. But now with HD, you really do have to get the cars very clean.
It's a
because
nightmare,
you see
Fred.
All the flaws.
It really is.
The cars come into us very clean from the manufacturers, but that's where their responsibility ends. And I don't know about you guys, but I find picking the stuff off the floor for interior shots more of a problem than exterior. But there I just use my good old antique Black & Decker electric battery vacuum.
I'm in there with paintbrushes when it comes to close dash shots and console shots. I'm
paintbrushes and toothbrushes dust off, to get all the little grit out from around the shifter and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I think all the car collector guys always use all the Meguiar's high-end stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that stuff's really great, but whatever you use, there's no replacing elbow grease. That's about the best thing.
Just as long as you don't use dishwashing detergent, that'll actually strip your wax off.
Now, you really do have to use products that are made for your car. Dishwashing and other household products. They may get rid of the dirt, but they'll almost get rid of the paint.
Yeah,
the
dishwasher
process.
Safe, not clear coat safe, probably.
So I'm afraid we don't have a lot of wonderful tips for you that are brilliant. After all, it's television, and we wipe things down so we can shoot it.
Best advice is get an intern and then tell them to go wash the car.
That they have to, to keep the cars clean.
Get a chamois and dry it.
Yeah. You'll be surprised. Put some elbow grease into it. Thanks, Fred. I hope that helps you. And I hope we've had fun with you, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to our Motorweek podcast, number 74. As Motorweek begins its 32nd season, I want to remind everyone that you can see Motorweek on virtually every public television station around the country, and also on Velocity, the cable channel that's dedicated towards automobiles, planes, boats, just about anything that goes fast, and we're delighted to be a part of their lineup. I want to thank our audio audio engineer Dave Wainwright for making us sound more intelligent than we probably actually do, our podcast creator Bob Mixter for having this idea in the first place, and our podcast producer Michelle Parker, who's not only the lady with the sound effects, but keeps us on schedule and writes everything down for us to make sure we don't make mistakes. But we do anyway, right? Thanks very much for listening to our podcast, and we hope to have you watching us soon on Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.